well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome back to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I'm so glad you're with me on the program today. It has been a couple of days, but we are back at it, talking with Paul Vallone of Grassroots North Carolina about the prospect of constitutional carry this session. You know, we've already seen Louisiana and South Carolina adopt constitutional carry this year. And North Carolina, I mean, listen, they can do it in theory. They've got a veto-proof majority in the legislature. You've got a Democratic governor who is certain to veto that bill. I don't think anyway, there's no way that Governor Roy Cooper is going to sign constitutional carry. But on paper, anyway, the votes are there in the House and the Senate to send that bill to Governor Cooper. And even if he rejects it, they can override the veto. The question is whether or not Republicans will actually act this session. And here to talk about it, Grassroots North Carolina founder Paul Vallone and his efforts and the efforts of Second Amendment advocates across the state of North Carolina to get constitutional carry on the books to make the state the 30th in the nation to adopt permitless carry. Take a look and a listen. Paul, thanks so much for coming on the program today. It's good to see you, sir.
Well, thank you very much for having me, sir.
Absolutely. All right. So, you know, listen, we've seen Louisiana pass constitutional carry this year. We've seen South Carolina get it done. The votes are there in the legislature, are they not, in your opinion, in North Carolina?
They should be. I think we have super majorities in both chambers now. And we were able to pass the repeal of our Jim Crow era pistol purchase permit law by overriding Roy Cooper's veto. The man who's never met a gun he wouldn't ban. But unfortunately, we have House Bill 189 for permitless carry. It passed the Judiciary Committee and the Rules Committee last year, only to be pulled from the calendar for its floor vote at the last moment, at which time the president pro tem of the Senate, Phil Berger, probably the second most powerful man in the state, said, and I quote, "We've done away with the pistol purchase permit, which was the number one goal of many of the gun rights groups for a long period of time. I just don't know if there's a need for us to delve into additional issues dealing with guns and people's Second Amendment rights. I guess it's not a Bill of Rights anymore. It's now a Bill of Needs. And the person who's going to decide whether we need constitutional carry or not is Phil Berger, the self-appointed arbiter of needs." So needless to say, we're not taking that one lying down. And we have been gathering many thousands of petition signatures. And we now have the petition and a hand truck. And we are going to deliver it to his office with media and with photographs and with a group of people on April 24th.
Okay. Now, can folks add their name? Is it too late to sign this petition?
No, absolutely not. They can go to grnc.org. Right at the front page is the petition. If they can join us in Raleigh at 10 a.m. at the General Assembly on April 24th, we would love to see them there. The more the merrier. And all the details are also on the homepage. Matter of fact, I think the link to sign the petition is at the top. And I think just below that is the link for instructions on how to join us on April 24th. We do ask people RSVP if it's possible to do so.
Okay.
Email address and everything in there for it.
So what do you think is behind Berger's position here? We passed, you know, this repeal of pistol purchase permits. That's enough for now. Why is he taking that position, you think?
I don't know exactly. In the past, he has stalled certain things like restaurant carry years back, and we had him actually doing a rug dance on a popular talk radio show because he had passed one thing but refused to pass restaurant carry. And he said at that point in time over that, it's not a matter of if, but rather when. And so I don't know what his motivations are. I think over the long term, he will do the right thing, but we want him to do the right thing now. Because we have a supermajority, we can override Roy Cooper's veto. the Republicans can do something for their constituency that the constituency wants before the upcoming election. Now, we hope we will maintain a supermajority after the election, but of course, these things are never guaranteed.
Right. And that's the thing, right? I mean, you have to strike while the iron is hot, so to speak. You've got the numbers. Why not do this now? I guess there might be some concern about making constitutional carry a campaign issue. But, Paul, I have a feeling that Democrats are going to try to do that anyway.
I think that's true. And you are right about that. I've heard from Republicans, well, constitutional carry doesn't poll well, as though your civil rights should depend on polls. That could be part of their motivation. But the bottom line is this, and the message we've been delivering is that the Republicans in other states, okay, in 29 other states, and the majority of red states have now passed some version of permitless carry. And we think it is high time that the Republicans of North Carolina remember who brung them to the dance and pass this thing now.
What are your concerns about, obviously, if Josh Stein becomes the next governor, if Republicans do lose that supermajority, we're not just talking about, the impossibility of getting constitutional carry off, through the finish line. What are you concerned about what Josh Stein would do, what Democrats would do, given the opportunities there in North Carolina? I don't think they're going to be playing small ball.
We're doing better than, say, Virginia right now, even though both are purple states. And the reason is the gun rights people in Virginia don't run the same type of election action doing independent expenditures for pro-gun candidates and really, investing a lot with our political action committee. And unfortunately, they don't have that kind of election effort. And so every time they turn around, they're back in the minority again and they're fighting off gun control. I don't think we will be in that position. At the very least, it will be a stalemate with a Republican General Assembly and a Democrat governor. Probably the worst we'll get is a stalemate. But we're hoping for better than that. Obviously, we would like to see Mark Robinson, who's a GRNC four-star candidate. As a matter of fact, our organization was the organization that sent the original video of Mark Robinson addressing the Greensboro City Council, an impassioned plea to preserve gun shows at the Greensboro Coliseum. And we sent that viral. We have a vested interest, if you will, in making sure that Mark Robinson gets elected governor of the state. And if he does, he has said he will both advocate and sign constitutional carry.
Right. So again, I mean, this is already going to be a campaign issue, right? On both sides. So why not get this done now? I think that is a fair question to ask. Again, if the votes are there, you're right. There might be some, Republicans who would sign this or who would vote for this next year, right? But don't necessarily want to do this during an election year. Here's but you can't start. Kick the can down the road. Again, we're talking about a fundamental civil right here.
Their stated excuse is, well, we don't want to, for the Republicans in marginal districts, we don't want to give them a campaign issue that can be used against them. But to my mind, what that smacks of is cowardice, pure and simple. And they need to do the right thing. They need to remember the people who brung them to the dance. Okay, gun voters were huge in the 2022 elections and the 2020 elections. And, we're going to be huge in the 2024 elections. So they need to remember who brung them to the dance and give us the bill now.
Are you, you talked about Berger's, reluctance to embrace this. What are you hearing from other lawmakers? Are you going to have some champions in the legislature who are willing to, hold some feet to the fire here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sponsor, the primary sponsor of the bill, Representative Keith Kidwell, has told us he will, in order to keep the bill alive right now, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to add a fiscal note to the bill in order to make it eligible for the second of the year of the 2-year session, because basically the rules say that if it hadn't passed one chamber by the first year, then it has to have a fiscal note in order to remain alive. But he said he'll add that, and it shouldn't be a big deal. As a matter of fact, there's a very easy provision that something could be added to that effect. So resurrecting the bill is not really the biggest part, the problem. The biggest problem is the leadership. And of course, Tim Moore, the Speaker of the House, is now running for Congress in virtually a shoe-in. He drew himself a district. Okay, so now he will almost certainly be going to Washington and as a U.S. House member.
Okay. Now, I know that, and you might have to fill in some of the details because it has been a little while since we've talked about this, but last year, it seems like there was some disagreement among Republicans about the specifics of the constitutional carry bill, right? Specifically, an education, I won't call it a mandate, but basically there was an educational component to this that some Republicans objected to, right?
Good memory. Yes. There is basically, in order to move the bill, the speaker required at least a nominal training provision. Now, basically, that could be done online. There's no record of it. You don't have to carry any proof that you've had the education. You could, I guess, call it an affirmative defense if somebody was ever involved in a defensive shooting while constitutional carrying. But the NRA, which had absolutely no role in the twice we have now passed constitutional carry. Well, actually, we passed it through one chamber previously. We've introduced it several times. We've got it through committee this time. The NRA has been AWOL until the last moment when DJ Spiker, their lobbyist, showed up at the sponsor's office and read in the riot act over the a nominal training provision claiming it wasn't a true constitutional carry bill, which, of course, is ridiculous because constitutional carry has any number of different provisions and different forms in the 29 states that have adopted it. If this was a restriction that might be, you know, or added additional restrictions to carrying, that might be a problem. But this is a giant step forward. And so the NRA, basically, we feel, is doing one of their not invented here syndrome responses.
Okay. Yeah. And it's interesting because in South Carolina, the bill that was signed by Governor McMaster mandates that local sheriffs put on training classes. I think it's twice a month. And, you know, that was acceptable. Right. So I you know, there's a saying in politics, right? You don't let the perfect be the enemy of good. And I would say, you know, whatever you feel about the particulars of that provision in the North Carolina bill, it doesn't make it a it's not a poison pill amendment. It is not something that makes this an untenable piece of legislation.
I mean, we're a no compromise gun rights organization, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
If we were losing something, that might be a whole different matter. But we are gaining something huge at the cost. You know, I'll put that word in air quotes. At the cost of one minor provision, which keeps track of no one. There are no databases. Okay, you can constitutional carry without any kind of, you know, permit, without any kind of record whatsoever.
All right. And again, Paul, if folks want to add their name to this petition here, hopefully we can get constitutional carry moving. How do they do so?
All they have to do is go to our homepage at GRNC, like Grassroots North Carolina, grnc.org.
All right, Paul, thank you so much for everything you're doing. I want to check back in with you maybe after the petitions get delivered and we can have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cam. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, man, always a pleasure. Thanks, Paul. Well, thank you to Paul for joining us on the program. We will be talking to him again in a couple of weeks, but you do still have time to add your name. I would say, obviously, North Carolina gun owners, it is critically important that you sign your name, but listen, I live in Virginia. I drove through North Carolina this past weekend, and it would be nice to not just have my concealed carry reciprocity with North Carolina, but it would be nice to not have to have my carry license with me in order to exercise my right to keep and bear arms once I cross the border of Virginia into North Carolina. So I don't know that it's going to have a huge impact if a lot of out-of-state residents add their names to the petition, but you know, I don't think it could hurt anything either. All right. Let's see. Before we get to our good deed of the day, our recidivist report, and our armed citizen story, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech, right? This is the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives. which leaves many folks feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 election wealth protection report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. All you have to do, text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 election protection report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas that the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Now let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of New York. As the New York Post reports, a judge who allegedly let gun-toting, squatting migrant off hook, despite DA's bail plea, previously let cop beaters go. Yeah. And yet, to talk to New York politicians, they would tell you, well, the problem we have with violent crime can be solved by, again, making sure that people can exercise their Second Amendment rights. This judge in the Bronx, criminal court judge Eugene Bowen, Democrat who ran unopposed in 2023, according to the New York Post, freed Hector de Souza Villada, despite prosecutors asking the judge to set bail in this case. He's the Venezuelan migrant who was busted on drug and gun charges while squatting with seven others in a Bronx home. He was arrested after somebody called 911 to report that he had allegedly flashed a gun at another man outside that home last week. Now, the Post reports that last November, the judge also released two men allegedly caught on video beating a cop who had asked them to put out their cigarettes inside a subway station in the Bronx. In that case, 23-year-old Kareem McCleary and 20-year-old Isaiah Jessamy were hit with assault charges for beating up Officer John Hernandez back on November 13th. Bronx prosecutors requested bail set at $10,000 cash or $30,000 bond for the two men, but the judge let them loose with zero bail. At the time, the president of the Police Benevolent Association, Pat Henry, told the Post, our failing criminal justice system is creating an incredibly dangerous environment for both cops and the communities that we protect. He added, judges have the authority to keep criminals who attack cops or carry illegal guns off the streets. They're finding every excuse not to use it. New York City police officers are doing our job. Judges need to start doing theirs. Now, listen, I'm actually okay if judges take somebody who's only accused of the possessory offense of carrying a gun without a license and says, you know what, you shouldn't be behind bars for the next 9 months while you go to trial. But when you do have allegations of violence, as was present in this case, then it becomes a slightly different matter, right? And unfortunately, what you have here is a judge who apparently doesn't think that even violent crimes you should amount to any sort of bail condition whatsoever. Right. Just you're released on your own recognizance. We'll see you back here if you show up in court. And if you don't, well, no big deal. We've always got the lawmakers in Albany who can, you know, excuse your crimes and place the blame at the feet of law-abiding gun owners. Today's armed citizen, speaking of lawful gun owners, a St. Louis man who shot an intruder in his apartment, a naked intruder in his apartment, in what police are calling an act of self-defense. This happened just a couple of days ago in St. Louis, about 2 o'clock Friday afternoon, in the LaSalle Park neighborhood of the city. According to Fox in St. Louis, investigators say the suspect broke through the wall of the victim's apartment while naked. I'm picturing some sort of Kool-Aid Man scenario here, but instead of a big glass jug of, you know, Kool-Aid, you got some naked stranger, oh yeah, bursting through the door. As the suspect entered the home, he reportedly made remarks in which he threatened to kill the victim and his family. Now, listen, I think once somebody breaks through the wall of your home, you can assume that they're not there with any sort of lawful intent, right? According to authorities, after the naked man burst through the wall, the homeowner, or the apartment dweller, pulled out a gun, shot the suspect's left hand. St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department reports that the suspect sent to a hospital for treatment. The victim's firearm was seized as evidence. Hopefully, he'll soon get his gun back. Police say the suspect was a 32-year-old man, the victim a 36-year-old man. At this point, does not look like charges are going to be filed in the case. Again, you've got someone in their own apartment. All of a sudden, a naked dude bursts through the wall. I'd say you've got the right to act in self-defense at that point, especially when threats were made. But we'll see if we can find any more details as the charges proceed there in court. Finally, today, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a police officer in Tacoma, Washington, who braved, I won't say icy weather, but, you know, it's still pretty darn cold. It's only mid-April here. And this officer in the right place at the right time to save a teen who had was struggling in Wapato Lake. The juvenile was in the water when they were unable to get out. This was about 2 o'clock Monday afternoon. Now, there were a couple of officers who were there patrolling the Wapato Park parking lot when the call went out about this teen who was struggling. So the officers ran to the scene. One officer ended up jumping into the lake, swam about 20 or 30 feet from the shore, went under the water and was able to get the teen, actually push him towards the other officer who was able to get the teen to shore. At that point, there were more officers waiting. They rendered first aid until fire crews arrived. Tacoma police not identifying the age or the sex of the child. They don't know how long he was in the water. I'm assuming here, I guess, they don't know how long the juvenile was in the water. But the juvenile transported to local hospital. At last report listed in stable condition, thanks to the life-saving efforts of that Tacoma police officer in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for that teen in need. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow as we hit on some more of the biggest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. The Reload, Stephen Gutowski, going to be with us on Thursday of this week as well. And you can check me out on Newsmax this afternoon in the 5 p.m. hour with Carl Higbee on Frontline. We'll be talking about the decision in Washington State to declare the magazine ban unconstitutional and then the emergency stay granted by the Washington Supreme Court just a short time later. We might even discuss a little bit of that on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam Company. In the meantime, don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date again on all of the latest two-way information from across the United States. Legislation, litigation, armed citizen stories, and more. It's all right there for you. If you like what you see, I encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.